Hello, everyone. You're welcome to another week of Unplayable. Con here, joined by the missing man of last week, Dave O'Connor. Cooper is somewhere in France, jumping from pub to pub, following the Irish rugby team and working on his French linguistic skills. Joe's also on holiday, so that means you've got Dave and me this week to discuss Irish Open, Wentworth. I think the teams from both sides of the Atlantic played practice rounds at Marche Simone this week, and then everything in between. But Dave, first things first, I got to give you the right of reply on the Ludwig Åberg matter. Before Switzerland, you didn't have him in your Ryder Cup team. You said words to the effect that he was a little bit overhyped. Now, ironically, in your defense, you did say that he would probably go and win in Switzerland and that your previous comments would go out the window. But give us your current position on the Ludwig Åberg matter.
Well, I do think that I was very clear in saying that if he won in Switzerland, it was a different kettle of fish, because you'd be talking about a man who had won not just for the first time, but also in the build-up to the Ryder Cup, as opposed to a man who had won top 10 at the John Deere Classic to his name and who was clearly very talented. But yeah, I mean, I think there was only one way that that pick was going to go once he had won in Switzerland. I think Maronk has, you know, a lot of reason to feel hard done by. Possibly less so after the Irish Open, which we'll get on to, but I'm sure he doesn't feel that way. I mean, given the year that he'd had, and I think especially after he won the Italian Open, we would have all said that he was, you know, odds on to make the team. But that being said, Åberg is obviously a huge talent. He's made a serious run towards the end, and getting that victory in what was a reasonably strong field. I think it would have been interesting to see what would have happened had Åberg not won. But I think Donald was probably left with little choice but to pick him. I think the hype train had obviously built up speed. And it will be interesting to see what sort of character he is and learn a bit more about him over the course of Ryder Cup. Obviously, the fact that he's never played in a major championship is unique, to say the least, when it comes to a Ryder Cup player. But there clearly is something about him. So hopefully Donald won't live to regret it, I imagine. And again, we'll get onto this later on, but I'd imagine, you know, he's going to be playing with someone highly experienced in the team, possibly McIlroy by the looks of it, in a four-ball setting, which might just take a bit of pressure off him. I probably live to regret playing devil's advocate with Ludwig Åberg, and hopefully he continues to prove me wrong in a couple of weeks in Italy.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Not to regurgitate the conversation that myself and the lads had last week, though, just on him versus Maronk, because I think that's probably the only one that was a little bit dicey. What is your, like, all joking aside, what do you think? Did Åberg edge it for you, or would you have still given it to Maronk?
I think Åberg probably edged it in the end, just given the fact that he was clearly coming into form. And it's not as if, you know, you obviously have just mentioned there about the major championship argument of him never playing in one, but like, it's not as if Maronk has huge major championship pedigree. I mean, what Maronk had going for him was 3 wins in 16 months, particularly at Marche Simone, which is obviously, you know, going to be huge for, or would have been huge for, a golf course where a lot of these players have never even played it before. Particularly on the US side of things. I think his upside is greater than Maronk's. Possibly Maronk was going to be the more steady hand. And I think Donald has probably not necessarily rolled the dice, but kind of gone, if this guy catches fire in Italy, or if he continues to play in the way that he's played over the last 2 to 3 months, like, we could have a real gem on our hands here. And it was always going to be, I suppose, a period of transition with the European Ryder Cup team, given that the likes of Poulter, Westwood, Casey, etc., have have all fallen by the wayside, you know, through live and also through form, realistically speaking, in age. So there was always going to be a couple of, new names in the fold, and possibly Aberg is one that will strike a bit more fear into the hearts of the Americans than Maronk. But I still do think Maronk has a gripe to, you know, he probably did expect to be in the team, and it's not as if he hasn't been playing well himself. I mean, probably not spectacular, but consistent. I think he had top 15 in Switzerland himself that week and top 20 at the Irish Open last week. So again, probably not something that was going to strike fear into the hearts of anyone, but at the same time, there would have been no doubt in my mind that he wasn't going to let anyone down either.
Yeah, and I think, like, you bring up the win in Italy, and one of the things that got Nicolai Højgaard in was because he had won in Italy in the past. So that's actually probably more of a comparison that Højgaard got in versus Maronk because of that. But I think Maronk just didn't, like he said, 3 wins in 16 months, which is completely fair. It's just that recent form that he didn't necessarily have, and Højgaard probably edged that as well.
Yeah. I think Højgaard is, again, similar to Aberg, has got a bigger upside to Maronk. But at the same time, I mean, the risk is there in that you pick two inexperienced players like that, and the occasion might be a little bit too big for them. And that's not to say that it'll always be too big for them, but it might be just too big for them in that moment and at this point in their careers, given their relative lack of exposure in Højgaard's sense and total lack of exposure in Aberg's sense to the biggest events in the game. So I suppose you would just hope that they are the kind of characters that will relish it and embrace it. Because, you know, the history of the Ryder Cup is littered with examples of probably inferior players to those two guys who have just stepped up on the big occasion and won huge matches.
The Philip Bryce won from when he beat Mickelson.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, Philip Bryce beating Mickelson in the singles in 2002, like Jamie Donaldson winning the winning point in 2014. There's all sorts of examples, particularly on the European side, given that typically speaking, certainly in our lifetimes, the European side has been, you know, inferior in respect of rankings, possibly in, well, definitely not in terms of results, given the dominance of Europe over the last 30 years. But there's no suggestion that these guys are going to end up like a Philip Rice. Ultimately, it's just an example of someone who really had no experience of competing at the highest level, being major championships, etc. But when push came to shove on a Ryder Cup single Sunday, he bet Phil Mickelson, who was the world number two at the time. So it can happen, it can be done. And probably worse players than Aberg and Højgaard have done it. So there's absolutely no reason to see why not.
Yeah, I know our intention is to get the Irish Open, and I don't think we wanted to spend too much time on this stuff at the start. But now that we're just on it, one of the words you said there was it was kind of expected that the European team were going to go through a bit of a transitional period. And I think everyone at the end of the last Ryder Cup would have said that and said, like, oh, there's going to be just into the abyss now for a couple of years, almost like the Irish football team. Like, you know, we're a few years away before we're going to be able to compete with these Americans again. And then, in fairness, you called it out probably 2 or 3 months ago. I wasn't really thinking about it at the time, that, like, that's almost not the case. This transition period almost isn't necessarily true. Like, you're looking at this European team thinking, hold on a minute. Like, maybe not quite favourites, but not far off favourites out of nowhere, really.
Yeah, well, I would still say it's transitionary just because of the change in faces. Like, it was always going to be a period where old veterans moved on and new guys came in. But it's not as if you're left for a scenario where you just have a couple of journeymen coming in to make up the numbers. And yeah, I think Donald has to feel pretty good about where he sits in the middle of September, two weeks out from the start of the Ryder Cup. Like, a lot of the players that you need and would want to be in form have come into form over the summer for him. And then I suppose the emergence of an Aberg, for example, is bound to is bound to excite people probably more than a Yannick Paul or a Moran could have if they'd have got into the team. Or Alexander Bjork was another one that probably didn't get mentioned, who was actually very close to qualifying automatically himself. So yeah, I mean, there's a reason why the US haven't won in Europe for 30 years. And you know, it's going to take a huge performance from them to do it. And, you know, we'll obviously talk a lot about this over the next couple of weeks, but, you know, there's an argument that pound for pound, in terms of form, at least Europe are every bit as strong now. So I certainly wouldn't be anticipating another Whistling Straits. I think it's more likely to be another Le Golf National rather than Whistling Straits. But I'd say my sense is that the reality is somewhere in between that. And I think that's good for everyone because, you know, as much as we would all want Europe to win it, what we really want is another Medina kind of finish rather than, because that's one thing you would say about the Ryder Cup is that I personally think that the Ryder Cup is one of the best events in sports, not just golf. And I think that in against the current backdrop of professional golf and how cynical and how money driven it's become, particularly over the last 18 months, there is sort of a purity to it, almost a bit like international football in some respects, whereby these lads are playing for, they're playing for their countries or their continent in the European case. They're playing for a team. They're not just out there playing for money. But that being said, the last, what, four editions of the Ryder Cup have been one-sided, more or less, one side or the other. It's 2-2 the last four. Europe won 2 at home. The US have won 2 at home. So it will be nice to see another kind of Medina or even Celtic Manor, which was the one that preceded that, in terms of like really competitive down to the end and really exciting. I think I'd rather see it finish 14-all in some ways than Europe win at 19-9, just for the spectacle of it and how enjoyable that is.
I think there's also the factor that it only rocks around every 2 years, which is obvious to say, but it definitely just adds the level of suspense and the whole hype around it, because it is such a hype train. But as you say, so many of the last ones have just fallen flat, like when it is one-sided. I remember watching 2006 Ryder Cup. I was only like 13 at the K Club. And it was all great, the build-up, and it was all cool because we're all in Ireland. I remember watching the Sunday singles, and I think I just went out to play golf myself that afternoon instead of just watching it finish out because it was just shite. So I think, yeah, you don't want it to be a damn squid and it to be over halfway through. You need the drama, you need the jeopardy, all the above. So yeah, I think, look, you can never tell until it all starts, and I know we're going to discuss it over the next little while. It does have the potential to be like that, but yeah, you just need to see how it plays out. Anyway, Irish Open. So I mean, first, obviously, it seemed like a decent tournament from where I was sitting here in Australia. First thing I noticed, and like, it just always seems to be the case from TV, just the sheer number of fans who turn up to the K Club. I always feel like the Irish Open does just, it's one of those top events in terms of fan attendance and the atmosphere, all that sort of stuff does make it better than so many other events on the European tour. Obviously with Vincent Norman winning in the end, fair play to him, but probably was a little bit of like, okay, it's just an average Joe has kind of come and done this, and Rory was in the mix. But it feels like when I was watching Rory, 2016 was his year, and he had those iconic shots on the 16th and the 18th, and they almost had their place. And now it was like, no, you're not going to be able to do that again this year. But then I think the highlight for me was probably Lowry's performance. What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, I think firstly, quick word for Norman, just given we're likely to spend far more time talking about McIlroy and Lowry. I mean, to be fair, it is his second win in 3 months. He won the Barbasol on, well, which is a co-sanctioned event. It's the one that sits opposite the Open. So it's not one of the big ones, but to be fair to him, he has won twice in the space of 3 months, yeah, 2 months even actually. He's only a young guy as well. Like he's only 26, 25, 26. So, it's positive signs for him and his career the way that he's progressing. And yeah, like the Irish Open is definitely one of the bigger events on the European Tour. I know it doesn't really have that Rolex series status anymore, but like it's definitely one of the most recognizable. And if you look back on the honors list over the course of the past 30, 40 years, it's a who's who of European golf. Anyone has won the Irish Open at some point. So yeah, it's definitely a nice one for him to get on his CV. And like, you know, shooting 65 on a Sunday anywhere is highly impressive. And he sort of came in the back door. He wasn't someone that was on anyone's radar for obvious reasons, but even, you know, with 9 holes to play, he wasn't someone who was hugely on the radar, but he just went on a nice little run for himself. And a lot of the leaders, you know, including McIlroy, of course, just really faltered on the back nine. And I think I was probably pleasantly surprised at how well the K Club defended itself. You know, it didn't turn into a shootout. There was plenty of jeopardy out there, plenty of drop shots in amongst birdies and eagles. So to be fair, from that perspective, the golf course really did play very well, or play very competitively for the top players. Yeah, I suppose to start with the positive or the negative. I mean, I would always personally like to spend far more time talking about the negative, but like Lowry's run on the back nine was very enjoyable and very heartening as well. And you know, to tie it back into what we were just talking about, something that Luke Donald has to feel very good about as well, given that the Lowry pick did probably cause him a bit of stress, and he got a bit of flack over it. Probably in some ways deserved, some ways undeserved. I mean, I think
No, I think it was, and I think
given.
also, sorry, just to add to the Lowry point, you're probably going to make it as well. Lowry seems to get caught up in his own head a little bit. Like I remember, okay, he made the last Ryder Cup pretty comfortably, but I remember the previous one. I think it was Le Golf National. He was like very heavily expected to make that team, and he just seemed to put himself under huge pressure all year. And then just didn't produce the goods for the rest of the season. I think it was after, wasn't it after he bottled, well, lost at Oakmont at the US Open. And then, so maybe that was it. Maybe it was 2016. After that, his whole season didn't make it. And I think there was a touch of that going on with him this year, where he was kind of probably at some point halfway through the season was like, shit, I'm actually just not really playing well here. I'm not nailed on for this Ryder Cup team. And then kind of inflated in his head.
Well, what both Lowry and Donald needed, like a hole in the head, was a missed cut or something at the K Club. So the fact that he managed to get himself up into contention and into the top five, I mean, it's his first top 10 since February. And I think we'd mentioned on multiple occasions throughout the year that Lowry was almost having a little bit of a sort of diet Scheffler season, whereby his strokes gain in terms of long game were quite good. Obviously not to the same level as Scheffler, but it seemed to be his putter that was letting him down. But even as Lowry admitted himself, like over the course of the last 6 to 8 weeks, his long game had sort of failed a bit as well, and his iron play wasn't as good, and he just did seem to be struggling. But he played very, very well tee to green all week, and then it was really, really good to see him rolling in a few putts in the back nine on Sunday. And obviously things just didn't go his way in the end, but he gave it a really good run, and like that has to be a huge confidence boost for him going into not just the Ryder Cup, but again, you know, he's defending his title at Wentworth this week, another place where historically speaking he's played really, really well. So it's really, really positive from, you know, multiple aspects, an Irish perspective, a Lowry perspective, and a Ryder Cup perspective, to see the performance he's after putting in.
I agree. I think Wentworth coming up this week is gonna suit him down to the ground. Suddenly, the narrative around Lowry, I think, changes from like, oh, this guy's not having a great season, as you said, like that pick would have caused a little bit of stress for Donald, to now, okay, he's got that big performance at the Irish Open behind him after he's made the team. The Wentworth's a bit of a bumper week as it is. It's a place that suits him down to the ground. And then suddenly it's like, oh no, actually, Lowry's one of the most informed players in the world. Now, that depends how this week goes in Wentworth. And I will probably talk a little bit about our picks, but he's certainly one of mine to do well at Wentworth. So I think he'll just be feeling so much better about himself in general as he heads into this Ryder Cup.
Yeah, 100%. And if he can put together another good week at Wentworth, he's a real confidence player and he'll go into the Ryder Cup feeling 10 foot tall. And like he's such an asset, I'd say, to the team room as well. Like he seems to just get on with everybody. So like there's just multiple options in terms of where to put him in the team and partnerships for both four ball and foursomes. And if he can get the putter working, he's one of the best players in the world. There's no question that I think the pick was worth the risk from Donald. But like as I said, they really just probably both of them just needed some validation for it, and thankfully Lowry was able to deliver it.
Other notables, Rory, as I said at the start, just wasn't kind of his week. Playing well, you would have expected. I think I said on the pod last week, you know, he's got a top 10 that with a C game, and that's probably what happened. I know he had some patches throughout the week where he was good. Shot two over in the last round. I really wouldn't read too much into that. I kind of just looked at that and said, oh, look, fair enough. Sometimes it goes that way. What was your thoughts on Rory?
Well, he did. He had an absolute shocker on Sunday. I mean, it has to be said, he really had a shocker. Like when that rain delay came in, he was tied for the lead. And it was even McGinley mentioned on commentary as they were going off the course that he'd had breakfast with McIlroy that morning. And when McGinley mentioned the possibility of some rain around, like McIlroy just got this little grin. So like, you know, he knew himself how much that was going to suit him in terms of softening up the course even further, because they were already on place in that week because the weather was actually spectacular in Ireland last week. You know, they were playing in 25 degrees, which, you know, you couldn't dream of anything better than that for an Irish Open in September, but there was still place in just because of the amount of rain we've had all summer. So the course softened up even further. And for Rory to be in a final group with Hurley Long, who is struggling to hang on to his cards, and Jordan Smith, who's, again, like not exactly McIlroy's level, let's just be frank about it, for him to come out into conditions that suited him down to the ground, at home, in the lead, against inferior opposition, and have the day he had from there was an absolute shocker. Might as well call it for what it is. I mean, you know, he found the water three times over the course of 15 holes. Two of those were with, I think, were with 9 and 8 iron, and the other one was the wood on 16, which, you know, you just had to go for it. But like, the 9 iron that he put into the water on 7, which was kind of the start of his struggles, genuinely, he missed his target by about 70 yards. Yeah. I'd say it wasn't too far off the hosel, to be honest with you. It was an absolute shocker.
What do you put it down to, though? I mean, maybe I'm letting him off the hook a little bit then. What do you put that shocker down to?
I don't know. I mean, possibly just complacency, lack of concentration, possibly the rain delay came at a bad time for him. I mean, obviously the conditions were going to suit, but not necessarily mentally, like, because he had got off to a really good start, and he was just after rinsing a drive down the fourth, the par five that they were all making mincemeat of, and then had to come off the course and then didn't end up birdieing that. So, yeah, I mean, I'd like to just put it down to one of those things. I think the good thing about this stretch of golf is that we'll find out very quickly, because Wentworth is another course that suits him down to the ground. So his performance this week will be one that I'll be keenly watching as usual, but also with just the Ryder Cup, obviously, is in front of mind for everyone. And the last thing you would want is to see McIlroy lose the form that he has been in over the last couple of months in particular.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, my read on it was it was just kind of one of those things. I know the shot you mentioned, I think it was on the 7th, missed by a mile, but like 16, went for that green, didn't come off, hit it in the water. It was 17 where he hit the other one in the water, wasn't it? Where He hit that terrible wedge and it spun off to the left into the water. Was that 17? Am I right in
No,
saying
that was there. That was earlier. That was like 11 or 12, because that was
that?
at a point where after making a mess of seven, he was kind of 1-2 back still and just wasn't kicking on. And then the second mistake, which I think was 11 or 12, was the one that really put him on the back foot. And yeah, like I think 16, because of the rain, most players were laying up on, because it was just getting a bit too long. So I think I wouldn't really criticize him for that one, because I think he was probably just trying to force something in there, at a time when, you know, he needed an eagle somehow to get himself back into things. Because at that point, Norman had set 14 under in the clubhouse, and I think McIlroy was 10 or 11. So he knew he had to push it. But yeah, look, just very disappointing. And, you know, you just really would like to see McIlroy close those kind of things out. I think from my money, he was, I'm sure the bookies had him odds on as well at the point that the rain delay came in tied for the lead. And so it was, within that context, particularly disappointing, I thought.
Yeah, okay, fair. Did you also see, actually, just while we're on Rory, he was kind of non-committal about his future of coming to Irish Opens. I think he was asked in press conference or an interview at some point, what's your situation, because he obviously hasn't showed up every week or every time it's been on. And my kind of take on it is he has played a very strong role in Irish Open and the success that it's probably had in the past, but his point was that it has to fit his schedule, and I think that's a fair one. I think he said this week in the schedule suited him down to the ground. Obviously, with Wentworth next week and being on this side of the world for Ryder Cup, but he was kind of non-committal going forward. He says, like, if it falls into a different time of the year, that he's just not going to be guaranteed to show up. He also made the point that, like, he'd love to see a little interchange between Irish Open and Scottish Open the week before the Open. I know we've talked about a link swing, as in having Irish Open, Scottish Open and the Open, three of them, but I hadn't really heard of that point before. And he was like, the Scottish Open aren't going to want to give up that spot just before the week of the Open. But I think that's a very good point. And like, the Irish Open is going to Royal County Down next year. It would be the ideal tune-up for the Open. So I think, like, the Scottish Open, why do they get such a strong pull and the Irish Open doesn't get that? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, it's a prime spot in the calendar. It's probably the prime spot in the European calendar, the week before the Open. And I just guess, I mean, historically, that's just always been the case. And it is frustrating from an Irish perspective, because the Irish Open does seem to get bounced around the schedule from year to year. They can't really find anywhere to put it consistently. We've made the point ad nauseum at this stage that we would rather see it be played on a links course every year rather than the likes of the K Club and Carton House, etc. But yeah, it is an interesting point that McIlroy makes, and it's one of the things that makes him particularly interesting, because he is, you know, brutally honest a lot of the time. But like, he really does himself no favours. When he says things like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to commit to the Irish Open going forward. I'm sure he doesn't really care, but the man on the street doesn't like to hear those things. You know, you want to hear that McIlroy is going to play in the Irish Open because it's his home open and he wants to support it. And I think in certain ways, he doesn't endear himself to people when he says these things. And personally, I think, you know, he should just play it every year. I mean, unless it falls against the Masters on the schedule, like, get on a private jet and come back to Ireland and play it. And, you know, because it's huge. The thing that gets lost in that is that it's huge for growing golf in this country. You know, young guys and young girls going out and watching the likes of McIlroy and Larry can be huge inspirations for them. And like I did, you know, McIlroy is very good, obviously. Like, you know, he said there was a video of him doing one of those make-a-wish things with a young sick child last week. But, you know, if he doesn't come back and play the Irish Open, that can't happen and that won't happen. And next year's, you know, poor kid that's struggling with cancer or something doesn't get to meet their hero. So I think McIlroy, I think he comes across on the point of not playing the Irish Open every year because of what might not fit his schedule. He comes across probably more selfishly than he intends. But on the point of the Irish Open and where it sits in the schedule, I think like if it could get anywhere near the Scottish Open, it will be superb for it. But I don't think that's going to happen because just historically speaking, even when they used to play the Scottish Open at Loch Lomond, which is a parkland, it still happened the week before the Open. So I just don't see that budging.
Yeah, I think that's the ace up their sleeve, really, isn't it? Like it's just always been there, and yeah, they're just not gonna move it, and they probably have a bit of weight. But yeah, the point around McIlroy not coming back, like, part of me was thinking, you know, he lives in Florida, and if it doesn't suit the schedule, it does mess things around. But like, you would never hear that from Lowry. Lowry also
No.
himself in Florida, and I think there is no way that Lowry would miss an Irish Open, like no matter what, as you say, unless it was clashing with the Masters, he's got to be there.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, like, and McIlroy lives in Florida because he pays no tax there. So, you know, pity about him. I mean, as I said, you can get on a private jet and be in Dublin in 7 hours. Yeah, you won't hear a lot of sympathy from me, for McIlroy not showing up to the Irish Open because it doesn't suit his schedule. Because he certainly will be showing up to every 20 million designated event on the PGA Tour. So yeah, no, I'm not having that from McIlroy, to be honest. And I really hope it was just a flippant comment that he hadn't really put a whole heap of thought behind.
Honorable mention for Mark Power before we move on. I had a cheeky 1 euro each way and, well, 1 Aussie dollar each way in him, and he gave me bang for my buck. I mean, he didn't obviously get the top 10 or whatever, but first week as a pro, for those that don't know him, he was had a pretty good amateur career. I think he had 2 Walker Cups, just turned pro last week, first time, first pro event. Definitely one to just keep an eye on now, over the next little while.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, really impressive debuts, in terms of professional rank and coming off the disappointment of the Walker Cup as well. That had to be a tough pill to swallow for all those guys, given the position they found themselves in against a much fancied US team on the Saturday of the Walker Cup. So for him to fly back to Ireland, having turned professional the day after the Walker Cup, and you know, play himself not necessarily into contention in his home open, but as you say, certainly put up a really strong showing, and that's going to be a very positive move for him going forward. Particularly to hopefully drive himself on, because he's probably gotten a taste of the big time now in the sense of playing Walker Cup and Irish Open back to back. And you know, presumably now he's going to have to take a step back and play some Challenge Tour events and stuff, which probably won't have as much focus on them or as much attention in terms of crowds on the course. So hopefully his taste of the big time means that that'll drive him on, and he'll be striving to get back to that level on a weekly basis.
It's a good point, actually, just the fact that like he's almost getting used to these big events like Walker Cup and then Irish Open, and then he's gonna have to drop back to the mundane and more. Yeah, a bit of a shock to the system, maybe, of this Challenge Tour stuff. Look, at the same time, he's probably used to playing college golf where there's only a
Oh,
handful of people.
I'm sure he's well used to it. I just mean that hopefully now that he's got the taste of the big time as such, that this is he realizes that this is where he needs to be, and it's a you know, drives him on.
Yeah, 100%. Wentworth, so iconic venue, flagship event for DP World Tour. Pretty strong field. Shane loves this place. Rory also has a pretty good record here. All the Ryder Cup European guys, anywhere there. Looking forward to week ahead. What's catching your eye?
Yeah, it's always a really good week, and you know, it is the flagship European event as such. And I think it probably, speaking of schedule, it's probably found itself in a really good spot in the schedule just because it's after the FedEx Cup and all that kind of stuff. But also in a Ryder Cup year, it's gonna attract a really, really good field. It always does, but like particularly this week with the entire Ryder Cup team playing, well, the entire European Ryder Cup team playing. What I find interesting and what I'm looking forward to is the fact that they're all playing together. So for those who haven't seen the Ryder Cup team, the 12 lads have been split up into four tree balls, which presumably have been handpicked by Donald and facilitated by the European Tour. I don't think any of us really believe in the random draw, because it will be one hell of a coincidence. But one thing that I found interesting from the parents was just to make up with them, because as I say, presumably Donald has picked these, and I wonder, is he kind of developing a little kind of pod system himself that Azinger implemented famously for the US team in 2008, whereby you split the team up into sections and these guys kind of partner each other throughout the week in the four ball and foursomes and kind of hang out together, etc. Because some of them would make sense, as we kind of alluded to earlier. So McIlroy's playing with Åberg and Højgaard. Like you could absolutely envisage a scenario where McIlroy kind of takes those guys under his wing for the week and plays alongside them, certainly in four ball. Larry's with Fleetwood and Straka, Fleetwood being, one of his best friends. And I think Straka was someone who I've heard a lot of people mention that not necessarily will be, all that friendly with a lot of the European guys, just because of he's kind of based himself in, I think it's, is it Arkansas or Alabama? It's somewhere down the deep south in America for the last number of years. So
I
maybe
just
we'll
remember
get.
he broke Lowry's heart at the Honda, remember? So obviously he is a forgiving chap if they're good pals after that.
Well, no, I don't think it's that they're good pals. I think it's just that because I imagine just because Straka doesn't seem to know too many of these lads that well, based on what I've read and heard. I think possibly the fact that he's been put alongside Larry and Fleetwood is probably to kind of put him with two of the more affable lads, easygoing lads on the team and get to know them. Because you can imagine, like, put him in with Tyrrell Hatton, and if Tyrrell's having a bad day, or else it's not going to get too much small talk out of him. It's interesting. It's interesting whether it remains to be seen, and it's just a theory. But I wonder, is Donald trying to get these pairs set up and kind of get them and see how they play together? And he himself is out playing with his two Italian vices, Francesco and Edoardo Molinari. I do find it interesting that Donald's playing this week. A part of me wonders, would he be better off just supervising slash watching? But I suppose he did play reasonably well himself last week, so maybe he's thinking of creating the ultimate stir and beating his team himself.
Well, golfers are se selfish by nature, aren't they? He's probably thinking, it's bloody high-paying event. I want to make a few quid here.
Yeah, true, true.
Just on your point though around the pairings, I noticed that too. So you've got like six of the European guys out in the morning slot, and then six in the afternoon. But I noticed just before the afternoon slot, literally the group before, you've got poor old Adrian Meronk in that group in front. So he's going to be on the outside looking in. Poor chap, pretty pissed off.
I feel very sorry for him. I really do. And like even just last week at the Irish Open, he was playing with McIlroy and Horschel in the first 2 days, and I'd say he was just, part of a big marquee group, looking at the crowds, thinking this should be the ideal tune-up for Rome, and instead, I'm just absolutely miserable out here. I actually backed Meronk last week because I actually thought, I wonder, is he one of those characters that's going to come out and be like, I'll show you all. And to be fair, as I said earlier, he didn't have a bad week, but I actually personally would just love the controversy that it will create for Meronk to show up and beat them all at Wentworth this week. But I'm sure Luke Donald doesn't wish any ill towards Adrian Meronk, but I'm sure he could do without Meronk winning the flagship event this week.
If I was Luke Donald, I'd be thinking, fucking miss the cup, mate. Don't be coming near here.
Couple of pair 77s and Højgaard and Åberg both get themselves in contention and just spoil the whole party.
And obviously the European lads were in Marco Simone over the last couple of days. Must be a bloody nice life flying from Dublin to Italy, play golf with the lads, drink some fine Italian wine, and then go play for millions of dollars this week in Wentworth. And I'm sure Moronka's just looking at that thinking, yeah, that could have been me.
What I found more interesting though was the fact that most, not all, but most of the US team were in Marcus Simone last week. So obviously it's a bigger track for them. I think three of them missed out. I think for three of them had personal reasons to not be there. I think Cantlay's wife's having a baby maybe or something like that, or maybe, I don't know, he's just too born to go to Italy, but he was certainly one of them didn't make it. But I think 9 of the 12 made the trip over, which is interesting because it does show a degree of commitment to get over and play the course that, as I said, I can't imagine on the US side, I can't imagine any of them have actually played it before. So it shows that they're certainly taking it seriously.
I agree. But how class would that be, flying over with your mates to get ready to play Ryder Cup, like go to Italy, like go out for dinner? Like, I'd say that whole buzz of being part of that is just absolutely class.
Yeah, I say, except for the fact that they probably hate each other.
The Americans?
A lot of them definitely do. Like, I know you've got the other examples, like, are the probably the minority example of the like Justin Thomas and a Ricky Fowler or Spieth, who are genuinely friends. But I'd say, you know, truth be told, these lads don't like each other. So it's probably not as ideal. I don't think it's certainly not a case of going off on a jolly to Italy with all your mates.
I wonder how forced it is when they're like sitting around and they're trying to create these bonds, and then it's Zach Johnson who's kind of prodding you, like the king of the crack himself.
I'd say a huge amount of it is forced. I'd say that's the problem, truth be told.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, Wentworth, to wrap it up then, who are you picking?
I'm going for Larry, actually. Yeah, I reckon Larry's a streaky player. I think, you know, he does things in little spurts. And I think that last week was particularly encouraging with the putter on the back nine. I think he'd 5-1 putts in a row on the back nine. And they were all from kind of varying distances, and like none of them were like, you know, 50 footers that are either might go in one day, you know, you might get one of them a week, but they were all kind of like good chances, 10, 15 footers that he'd been missing all season. And he knocked a few of them in and got himself into contention. And as we said earlier, his iron play was back to Diet Scheffler levels, which is good enough for anyone. So I actually really fancy him to have a good week. He loves the place. He's a defending champion. It suits him down to the ground. So I've stuck my couple of quid each way on Larry. I think I got him at 18 or 20 as well, which was a reasonably good price, I thought, even though it's obviously a top-class field.
For the possibly the first time ever, yeah, you and me might be going for the same bet. I'm going Larry as well. I've already done my few quid on him. He, for all the reasons you mentioned, he's won here last year, defending champion. I always remember Rory beating him out. I think it was 2014 when Rory won it. And he just obviously here all the time. It just felt inevitable that he was going to win it at some point. And last year was that year, I think, based on his performance last week. I'd say he's just feeling good about himself as well. He's looking forward to Rome. Everything has just turned a nice little corner for him. So I'm going him. I also will probably just have a little, I have had a little flutter on Connor Syme. I backed him last week. He got me a little each way last week, three top tens in a row. It was kind of a backdoor top 10 for him. I got him at 100-1 this week, which is pretty juicy. But yeah, so that's what we're doing. Both of us going Larry. It has to happen. Just before we wrap it up, there's start of the PGA Tour fall season. So I was a little bit confused about this earlier in the year. And I think even up until, I read about it earlier today, that the whole PGA Tour thing was just a little bit confusing and how the season is being structured. So we know that they made changes to the FedEx Cup, whereby instead of top 125 or 100 making it to the playoffs, it's cut down to top 70. My reading at the time earlier on in the year is if you weren't in the top 70 on tour, you lost your card. I might have said as much on an earlier pod, but that's actually not the case. It's still top 125 that keep their card. But if you're outside the playoff places, you now need to battle it out in the autumn to keep your card. So basically, the top lads are free to go and lie on a beach somewhere and drink strawberry daiquiris. But the lads who didn't make that cut, that top 70, have to battle it out like something from the Hunger Games. And I'm all for it. I just want a bit of drama, and we should get that over the next couple of months. Usually the start of the season is kind of wraparound season. It's a bit of a kind of a damp squid, isn't it? And because the top dogs, like Rory and all, usually start their year like in Dubai, and then they get their run of it. And this time of year is usually just a little bit, just not great. Also, Justin Thomas, Adam Scott, Billy Horschel, and Lowry all finished outside the top 70 this season. So they need to get inside the top 50, I think, on the final standings by the end of the year if they want to get into designated events next season. So, yeah, probably. It's like what we were talking about with the Ryder Cup and the drama. I think it could actually... It almost reminds me of, like, if Q School was televised, I think that would be a class event. And I think that that's how this could potentially play out for the next little while. No big dogs, but plenty of drama.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you're doing a really good job selling it. I think you sold that better than Jay Monahan or anyone else on PGA Tour. I was quite ambivalent about the prospect of these fall series, but now I'm buzzing for them. As you can probably tell by my inflection in my voice here, I can't wait. But it's actually a decent field for what it is. And as you said, there is a lot on the line for some of these guys. You do have Homa and Thomas playing this week, tune up for the Ryder Cup, no doubt. But also Homa's looking to become the first man since Steve Stricker to win three in a row of the same event on tour. Stricker did it at the John Deere, where it all started for Mr. Åberg. And Homa has won the last two editions of this. So he's looking to go three in a row. It's in California. We all know that Max Homa loves to play a bit of golf in the West Coast, particularly in California, his home state. So he's the hot favorite at 7-1, I think. Probably not worth touching at that price, but certainly favored for a reason. Tigala is playing as well. Actually, he was someone who caught my eye just because he had a top 10 here last season. And he's just a nice guy. So why not? Why not have Tigala? But I wouldn't be surprised to see Homa win it. He clearly loves the place. I do find it interesting, though, that Thomas is playing here rather than Wentworth, because he could play in Wentworth. I understand why Homa is doing it. Just not quite sure why Thomas is.
I think that outside the top 70, maybe he's just trying to force his way in a little bit. But I agree. I think he would probably be better served playing at Wentworth.
But does the likes of Thomas not have other exemptions? Like, I know he finished up tops. Like, I mean, I don't envisage a scenario where Thomas won't be playing in the big events next season because of who he is, and also, well, not necessarily just because of who he is, but because he's won a major in the last couple of seasons. I'm sure if you read the small print, there's further exemptions rather than just top 70. I would have thought that, Wentworth was an excellent tune-up for the Ryder Cup. So I'm a little bit surprised to see that he's playing, particularly up in the West Coast of America, like having come, as we mentioned, to Rome, to go back to the West Coast to play. But, who am I to question Justin Thomas?
And their private jets, yeah. Cool, right, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Dave. Everyone enjoyed the BMW at Wentworth, and we will catch up afterwards.